Welcome to... Hey guys, can you keep it down? I'm trying to record a podcast over here. Oh, there we go. Sorry about all that noise. I'm a project manager at a construction site building the internet. No, seriously. I'm focused on data center construction with a passion for electrical mechanical systems. Enough about me, though. Welcome to the podcast, Doing Girly Things, a podcast focused on breaking down the stereotypes surrounding construction, engineering, and other STEM-related fields and making them girly things to do. In this podcast, I answer all the questions I've been asked as an engineer about how things work in personal stories from people in these positions. This podcast focuses on answering questions from professionals, authors, and even a sexologist. I'll be interviewing men and women to talk about topics, how to effectively communicate in the workplace, and what does fashion have to do with engineering. Lastly, before we start the episode, I would love to introduce my weekly newsletter. Go to Doing Girly Things to join the weekly toolbox talk. This letter will be a 10-minute read in your inbox for a weekly update on what Doing Girly Things is up to. This is my way of trying to beat the algorithm and deliver content to people that actually want to read it. In the newsletter, you'll gain knowledge about basic construction topics, clips and quotes from the episode, resources, and of course, the cute silhouette I make for each guest. Go to my website, Doing Girly Things with 1G, to sign up. Hope to see you there. And if a weekly newsletter isn't your thing, always feel free to like and subscribe on the app that you are listening to, or head over to Instagram.
All right, thank you for joining us today, Natasha. Today's guest, Natasha, is actually an author. So she wrote a book called Shit Adults Never Taught You, and I got an advanced copy of this book to read through. And reading through the book, it was interesting, all the different topics. There's about 90 different topics in there, and they're in little segments. And so if you know anything about me, you know that I love my morning reading habit. And so every morning I read for about 20 minutes. And so I started reading this book in the morning after she sent it to me. And so on today's podcast, we're going to talk all about the negotiating chapters. And so through that, she wrote tons and tons of awesome information about negotiating jobs and cars and how to understand all of the jargon. But before we get into all of that, Natasha, how about you introduce yourself and talk about what experiences did you have in life that brought you to writing all of this book?
Sure. So I'm Natasha. I wrote the book Shit Adults Never Taught Us. And I have had apparently at least 98 experiences, because there's 98 chapters. And it was really a book that I never intended to write, but what it came out of is a bunch of conversations I had with friends and family, acquaintances, coworkers, strangers on the street. And it just felt like there was so many things that were left out of our education when we were growing up. And for some reason, you know, we dissected frogs and we took years and years of physical education, but we never took mental education or figured out our own health. And that is a huge gap in knowledge. We had tons of pre-calculus and algebra classes and never learned how to do taxes or what a 401k was or how to negotiate a salary. And then, you know, we maybe had some friends in school, but we never learned how to make friends as an adult. We don't know how to fall in love, get our heart broken, deal with heartbreak, how to have a proper fight, how to get comfortable saying no, calm anxiety. And there's so much that we just didn't learn. And so I wrote a book about it.
And the book is awesome, too, because it gives it in these short little blurbs. I would say in the morning I could read about three little chapters. And it was really powerful the way that you wrote them. And so what I was wondering is you wrote the money section first. Was that because you feel that money is kind of the biggest aspect that we can act on first? Or what kind of drove the sectioning of the chapters throughout the book?
Yeah, so there's four sections of the book. And because it's Shit Adults Never Taught Us, the four sections are career and money shit, relationship shit, mind shit, and life shit. And the career section, the reason I put it up front is it's the boring stuff that maybe we did learn, but we tuned out. Or it's the boring stuff that people scroll past and never read about. And this book, like you said, is... it's three, maybe four pages a chapter. It's quick. It's funny. I used humor to capture, and it's very conversational. So it will get you straight to the point. There's not a lot of fluff, not a lot of just jargon that's added. It's very relatable. And I wanted it to be something that you could use right now. So a lot of the chapters end in a give it a fucking shot checklist that you can actually walk through the items and check mark. Okay, I read the chapter, I get it. But now I just have 5 things with check marks that I can go and actually do. And then it's not just a regular self-help book that you read, you put down, you forget about. It gives you actionable items to go out and actually improve your life and grow upon.
And I really like the way that you did it with the checklist, because I myself am a self-help book junkie, and I have actually tried to detox, because I found that I joined this book club and, you know, they're reading all of these books, and I was like, wait, there's this whole other section of books that we can read. I've only been reading self-help books my entire life. And so I really like how at the end you put those actionable steps, because sometimes it does feel like you get to the end of a self-help book and you're like, okay, I learned all this great knowledge. Now what?
Exactly. And what I've always found with self-help books is usually it's one or two topics and it's an entire book. And then you read it, you put it down, and you just expect your life to change because you read a book, or you expect yourself to instantly grow. And unless you actually take what you've learned and apply it, much like therapy, like, it's not what's in the session, it's what you do after the session. It's a book. It's not going to change your life unless you actually put into motion the things that you've learned. That's how you grow. So I'm very ADD. I'm doing a million things at once, and I have a hard time focusing. And I like the instant gratification of things. That is not always possible. So what I wrote this for that type of person. I did 2, 3, 4 pages a chapter. At the end of it, you've got your little checklist. So it's not just, I read it, now my life's going to change. I read it, now here's some things to do and implement into my life so my life can grow and become better.
And through those checklists too, I think it's not always just actionable steps too. It's also think about what's the definition, or like one of them in particular that I'm thinking about is you actually give an activity of like, try to envision your life in 5 years from now. And so
yeah.
I really like that it also includes like journal prompts. So a lot of the times, and I've been going through this with my therapy too, is you start to think about success. What does money success look like? What does negotiating look like? And you're like, oh, I want a better life. But if you've never defined what does a good salary mean to you, then how do you know you've actually gotten that?
Right. And some of these topics, if not most of these topics, are things that we don't discuss with each other for some reason. And so it feels almost like we can't ask these questions and we can't talk to each other, when we definitely can. But the book is supposed to bridge that gap. It's something that helps you start those conversations with friends, but also start the thoughts in your head and get your brain flowing in that kind of way. Like you said, it's not all actionable items that you have to get up and go do. Some of them are just like, start thinking of things this way. Take a minute, close your eyes, see if during this 5 minutes that you've assigned to just thinking, what comes up for you. Or try and do these 4 things this week. And it's not something you have to do right now, but it is a timeline. And a lot of it, like in the mental health, the mind section, isn't stuff you physically do, but it is allowing yourself the space to think and feel the things that you're probably not allowing yourself to think and feel on a regular basis. And you might not even know how. So this is just a prompt or a conversation starter with loved ones, or just a way to sort of calm all of the things that are coming up for you in a different way than you've probably thought of before.
And I think what you're saying is it helps to start the conversations, because through reading it in little short blurbs, is it's not like you're getting a complete download, but you're getting enough to want to talk about it more. And one of the chapters that I really liked is when you talked about negotiating a salary and anchoring. And if you could just talk a little bit more about that and like your experience that you had with it, because I thought that was such an awesome chapter about negotiating.
Yeah, there's a few negotiation chapters in the career and money section. And this whole book in general is I had this experience. This is what worked for me. It hopefully will work for you. It may not, but hopefully it does at least inspire an idea that you can take and run with. The negotiating of salary and raises was something I never really learned. And anchoring is if somebody in a job interview asks you what your salary expectation is, first of all, you do not have to answer that question right away. And you don't even have to answer it at all. Somebody in most states right now in the United States, they can't ask you what your current salary is ever. They just can't. But if you were asked the question, what is your salary expectation? And you say something like, well, I'm currently making $55,000. They're anchoring you to $55,000 where if you said something like, you know, for this role, I could see the responsibilities ranging from this, 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 and this, and I see those responsibilities being valued at $75,000 to $85,000. You're anchoring yourself into $75,000 at the lowest. You never even mention you're currently making $55,000, where if you said, I'm making $55,000, but for this role, I think it would be $75,000, you're basically telling the person, I want a $20,000 pay raise, but that person has already anchored you to $55,000. It seems extreme to give you something so high when if you say $75,000 and they go, well, we only have $70,000, you've anchored yourself to $75,000 and it's just dropping you a little bit lower than that. But in your head, you personally know that's still a raise for you.
And then what you've also done to the recruiter, you've already kind of just let them see what's all in your bag. You have nothing left to hide. You negotiate more. You've already told them how much you're making. And so I had a friend recently and she's trying to decide. She's about to graduate. And she's like, I'm trying to hold on to this one job offer because if I go to this other company, I don't really have anything to leverage based off my other salary. And I quickly told her, I was like, you don't have to let that company know that you're lying. That company doesn't have to know that you have another job offer in the bag or that you have all of this. And if you say no to that other job offer, that's none of that other company's business.
You're welcome to use them to leverage against each other. If you say, like, I've had this, not necessarily for salary negotiation, but I had a dream job that I loved, and they were just dragging their feet with the hiring process, and another job came in. And I was like, I mean, I don't want to lose the first one that I love so much. So I called them, and I was like, hey, I just want you to know I have another job offer on the table, but I like you guys more. Would you be able to give me an answer one way or another by the end of the week? And they were like, yeah, actually, we were working on getting you an offer letter this week. And I'm like, oh, thank you. If I didn't call, I wouldn't have known. And now I can confidently turn down the other job. But anchoring isn't, like you said, it isn't just your salary. If you are in a job interview and they say, what are the benefits you currently have? Or you voluntarily mention, you know, I only get 5 days vacation. I only get 2 weeks vacation. Or my current job doesn't offer any healthcare or anything. You're giving them information saying they can lowball you a little bit if their benefits package matches a better version of what you have. So if you're saying you never mention your salary, you make $55,000, but you never mention that, but in the interview you do mention that you currently don't have any benefits that include healthcare or dental, and you currently don't have a 401k option, and you currently only get 2 weeks vacation where this company knows that they offer three, now they're thinking they can offer you less money because they're going to seem more shiny and fancy because they do offer all of these benefits. So if they were going to offer you 75 in their head, they might be like, actually, we could probably offer like 65 because she's going to get all these benefits she doesn't even have now, and that'll be the cake on top. And that's anchoring you in a different way. So you don't have to volunteer that much information. When you're in a job interview, it's really about two sides getting to know if that's the best fit. It doesn't have to be all on you. When we're in a job interview, we forget that we're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing us. It has to be a good fit for both sides. You don't want to get into a job and then 2 months realize that this is the wrong job for you and you have to leave because you were so focused on getting the job that you forgot whether or not you actually wanted it.
I have so many snaps to that because that's exactly how I feel like sometimes it's almost the competition of getting the job, getting the offer versus getting the actual career or getting what the company is going to offer you, because that company is lucky to have you and you need to feel like that because you're interviewing them, because like you're saying too, it's like you walk into the work environment, you see they're all wearing business suits and you thought you're going to be able to wear your hoodie to work.
Exactly. And then you probably researched the company before. You probably loved what they did and you worked yourself up before this interview and you've imagined the future. You've imagined yourself working there, telling all of your friends that you work there. And then you get there and you interview and it's a letdown. You can't wear the outfits you want. The people were kind of mean and cold and rude in the interview. And you are unwilling to let go of the vision you had and replace it with the reality, and the reality is what you're going to live. The fantasy version is never going to be what you live. So if you're mm-hmm. looking at something from the fantasy version, you're only going to disappoint yourself.
And you're also going to get yourself into a career where you're going to realize that now you have to go job search again. And you're basically back to square one. And so I really do think that learning how to not only negotiate, but to ask the employer. So when the employer says, do you have any questions for us? You should say, yeah, I got a whole list. I want to make sure that you fit me.
Yes, there are a few questions that I love asking people in interviews that are on the other side of the table. And those include if you've looked up their website and you have a question about a job, just be like, what is it like when we're working with this client or in this capacity? Or that shows, first of all, that you've looked up their work. And then you can also say, what's your favorite part of working for this company? Or what would a typical day look like for this position? Or why do you think this position is valued at this company? And what are the qualities that you are looking for in this person to grow within the company? Not necessarily what are the qualities that you're looking for in this position. It's you. That's why they brought you in for an interview. But what are the qualities of a person who grows within this company, who's promoted within this company? And that's something, that answer may not even be about you. If they say, well, we really like loyalty, that tells you more about the company than it tells you about what they're looking for from you.
Because if they're looking for loyalty, you can kind of start to discern what does that mean in their definition. Is loyalty working on Saturdays, or is loyalty repping the brand in a positive way?
Exactly. And sometimes we get so nervous in interviews, we forget to listen to the other person and we don't do what you just did, where if you say loyalty is valued at this company, you can follow up and say, great, what does that mean to you guys? Does loyalty mean everybody here has worked here for 10 years and positions seldom open up? Or does it mean loyalty is working on Saturdays and into 3 o'clock in the morning, and loyalty is taking on jobs when Joe goes on vacation for a month? Like, what does that mean? Or you can ask, like, I took an interview and subsequently a job at a company, and the people that were interviewing me, the guy casually dropped in a conversation. He was like, well, in the 6 years I've been here. And so when he was done speaking, I was like, what's made you stay for 6 years? What do you love about it so much that you've stayed for 6 years? And he like lit up and he started talking about it. And his face, it didn't even matter what he said. It was the fact that he got excited to tell me why he's been here for 6 years and why he loves it, that I was like, oh, I want a place where I'm that excited about my job that somebody who's explaining it to somebody else is so excited to be like, this is why it's great to work here. That's the kind of company I want to work for.
And I love that you gave the examples of the questions that you asked, because yours are very similar too. Because in every interview that I go to, I always say, why are you staying at this company instead of on LinkedIn? And because I like to call out the fact, because honestly, a lot is happening on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is people are sending job offers all the time. They're sending job offers while you're already at work and you're getting.
Oh, yeah.
And so I like to specifically call that out because it is so easy to flip your thing on LinkedIn that says, I'm looking for a job. And all of a sudden, you're getting all these interviews. And so with that, that lets me know, why are you not looking for somewhere else to work? Because if you're not looking for somewhere else to work, then that means this must be a pretty good place to be at.
And if you're not comfortable asking a question like that, there are other questions you can ask. So you can ask questions like, what is it about this job that makes you stay in your current role? What is it about this job that is so exciting to you that you love getting up on a Monday morning and coming to work? There are other ways to phrase it. You can also say, instead of like, why are you leaving this job? Why would you not leave this job? You can say something like, I am looking for a small workplace, a community environment. I love interacting with my coworkers. Is that the type of environment here?
And when you start to ask questions like that too, if you do take the job, usually those people remember you and you can follow up with them later in the career path. So there was one time that somebody had mentioned to me that they had done this really cool project, and I actually came in and followed up with him after I took the job and was like, hey, you told me you'd worked on this really cool project during the interview. How would I get involved with that?
Yeah, something like that shows that you were listening and that you're dedicated, and people love that.
And it really does help. And so have you ever found any areas where negotiating has backfired? Because I was
definitely
trying to, yeah, where
can or, you or yeah. When something in your brain, you kind of spiralize into backfiring, like it may not have, but you start to think that it did, like especially if you negotiate a salary or a raise and you don't hear back from that person for like a week, your brain probably wonders and you know, oh my God, I have to replay this conversation 3-4 times. What did I say wrong? Was it when I got the hiccups? Like you start thinking all these crazy things, and it's probably none of that. Those people got busy and it's their lives, or they have to like figure out if they even have the budget for you. And I always say follow up, but follow up with a reason. So I will follow up. Like if I had a job interview, I'll follow up with something we talked about in the interview. Like, hey, in the interview I mentioned I used this software. Here's a link to it. Or, hey, in the interview you asked what my start date could be. I've looked that up and this is the start date I'm comfortable with. Or you just have a reason. The reason the first time can always be thank you so much for meeting with me. Let me know if you have any other questions. But eventually, if you don't hear from that person for 2 or 3 weeks and you want to follow up, you can just follow up and say, hey, I'm just checking in, seeing if there's any progress on your job search. But you can also check in with valuable information. They're more likely to read that email if it's got valuable information, or if it's like, I was looking you guys up, I saw on your Instagram that you guys recently did this really cool job and I just wanted to reach out and say, you know, congratulations. Or something that adds value as opposed to everybody else that's just saying thank you and then they never hear from them again.
Thank you. Now when can you give this to me?
Exactly. Because you don't want to respond to that either. Like you don't want to respond to the person who reaches out to you like a sales email and is like, thank you so much. Now give me money. Nobody wants to talk to that person.
Well, and you have to think about the emails that you respond easy to. Like the emails that I respond, like I will get an email and I'll respond within 30 seconds if I can figure it out and blah, blah, blah. But if you're asking these really detailed questions instead of providing them like, hey, we were talking about this software. I think it might help the company. I just wanted to send it over to you. By the way, do you have, just reaching out also out about an update on my application. And so then you're not immediately trying to take from them.
Exactly. They're the things that people overthink and underthink, and it really depends on the person that you are. But like, I have friends who are like, okay, so I have this perfectly drafted follow-up email, and I have written these 5 paragraphs, and they are all dedicated to a different thing that we talked about in the interview, and I'm going to send it at 4 p.m. on Friday because I know that's the end of their day and all of this. And then I'm like, okay, but have you actually thought about the fact that at 4 p.m. on Friday, they might not be at their computer. They might, you know, be
in the car.
They might be in the car. They might be somewhere else. And a 4 or 5 paragraph email is coming through on their phone. And it's going to be so much on a phone where you've written it on a computer. Like you have overthought the content and you've underthought the practicality of it. Where a simple thank you at, you know, Thursday at 11, probably would have gotten the better response.
Mm-hmm. And I personally think that sending emails more around lunchtime is the move, because it's not the beginning of the day. You're trying to get everything done around lunchtime. Almost all of us, especially during COVID, are eating lunch at our desks. And mm-hmm. I work in an office, technically a trailer, but I work and I have my own office. And so I'm always eating at my desk. And so a big time where I'm responding is during 11 a.m., 12 p.m. And so if you're trying to get a hold of somebody, make it short and sweet. Make it something that they want to respond to, because it doesn't feel like a one-sided conversation.
And remembering that something that's really important to you may not be super important to them. So if you send it at noon on a Tuesday or noon on a Wednesday, and it's, you know, 9 a.m. on a Thursday and they haven't responded yet and you're freaking out, remember that they may have a lot of really busy stuff this week and they may not be able to get to the non-urgent, non-time-consuming emails until Friday afternoon. And that's mm-hmm. when you'll hear, or next week. And that may feel like an eternity to you because you've been thinking about it every second of every day and they saw the email, but they haven't had time.
What advice would you give people to do during that lull of, okay, well, I sent the email, now what?
Find ways to distract yourself and keep going. At putting all of your eggs in one basket, again, it's just going to set you up for disappointment, because nothing goes 100% of the way that we want it to. And even if you get the job and it's the right salary, but then they say, you know what, we don't offer a 401k package, you've envisioned everything else, and then you're going to be so disappointed. Where if you just say, if I get it, I get it, and if I don't, I don't, that's cool, and you keep searching or you keep moving forward in some way, like, you're still making progress for yourself. You're still putting yourself out there, and that's at the end of the day what's the most important and what's going to get you the life that you want. Where if you're putting all your eggs in that basket, you're giving somebody else all of the power to disappoint you.
And exactly. And I think understanding that sometimes a no is a good thing, and yes. Here in not hearing back, because there are some jobs where I did exactly what you said, put all my eggs in one basket, and I was just so devastated when they kept, you know, they're like, okay, well, we'll get back to you next week. Promise you offer letters in the mail next week. It has been 4 years. I have still not seen an offer letter.
Yeah, I've had jobs like that too. I had a job interview a few years ago, and I went so many rounds. They had me do a mock presentation of a job that I would pitch. They had me do, I think, 3 or 4 rounds of interviews with different people at the company. The last interview ended with, thank you so much. You'll hear from us early next week. Expect an email Monday morning. Never heard from them again. And it was like I was checking my spam. I was checking email on a bunch of different computers, making sure it was coming through. I was testing emails. I was like, I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. And it never happened. And I guarantee you, those people found somebody and forgot I existed on the face of the earth. But I disappointed myself by believing that that was going to be where my happiness lied. My happiness was going to lie in that job. And it's not. Your happiness mm-hmm. doesn't lie in the next thing. It's not when I get this job, when I get this relationship, when I get this house, when I go on vacation, then I'll be happy. No, you got to make yourself happy now. And all of that is just a bonus.
Yes, exactly. And all of that is just part of the experience of happiness. That's not the key. Yeah, all of it. And so I loved the negotiation part and the career part of your book, but one of my other favorite chapters, and that I encourage all of my listeners to read, is there's a chapter in there called Stop Talking So Much. And if I had to think about the chapter that I think about the most at work, it would honestly be this chapter. And so part of the reason why it stuck out to me was, especially in this Zoom audio world, it sometimes feel like you're so scared of the blank and the downtime between you talking and someone else answering.
Mm-hmm. And you're so scared of going through an hour-long call and not having anything to say and somebody noticing, where they probably didn't. But honestly, we talk so much to fill space. And if you ever are at a dinner with somebody, like I noticed this with a family member, but if you're ever at a dinner with somebody and you notice that certain people, the second the conversation dies, have to jump in with a new topic or they say something mundane like, oh, look at that other table's plate of food, that looks good, or it's been cold today, or something mundane that isn't even a conversation starter, it's just a sentence that means nothing to anybody else, then that's somebody that's uncomfortable with silence. But in the negotiation chapters of like negotiating a raise or a salary, I do mention not talking so much. Mm-hmm. And if you are able to take 2 or 3 seconds in, like, say you're negotiating a raise, and you're having these discussions and your boss keeps asking you questions. They say, how do you think you've contributed to this company this year? What do you think your values to your team are? Or whatever. If you count in your head to 2 or 3 every time, then you go 1, 2. Well, I think my, you know, whatever. Then when you're stumped and you don't know an answer, it won't look weird. Because you've been taking 2 to 3 seconds to answer every single question. And that's a tool my dad actually gave me. Is he's like, in job interviews and whatever you think you're going to need a minute to think, answer all the questions with a 2-second pause. Not like a distracted, I'm on my phone kind of pause, but a, I'm listening, I'm engaging, and I'm genuinely thinking of an answer for every single question. Then when you're stumped and genuinely thinking of an answer, they don't think you are stumped. They won't know the difference.
And I think that overall it makes you a better listener, because I love the quote, we have 2 ears and 1 mouth. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. And so you need to listen as twice as much as you talk. And so that 2-second delay makes it so the whole time somebody's talking, you're not sitting there like, okay, well, what am I going to respond with? What am I going to respond with? It allows you that mental space to respond.
So much of what we do in conversations is just wait for the other person to stop talking so that we can start. And we didn't actually hear anything that they said. We latched onto one sentence at the beginning of their monologue and we didn't hear the rest of it. And that happens a lot. But if we're just talking to fill space or we're just talking to hear our own voice, we're only speaking from what we know and we're not listening to learn anything new. I think that is a quote from, I really don't know who it's from, but It is basically saying when you speak, you're only speaking what you know. When you're quiet, you're actually learning.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so the only way to learn is to stop talking. But it works in negotiation too, because sometimes you don't give the other person time to agree or disagree. And so you let that void and then you just keep talking and talking. And I've noticed that whenever people talk about negotiating a pay increase, is they don't even allow the person that they're asking the pay increase for to even talk and respond. They just keep talking.
Absolutely. I had a mentor one time tell me that if you want to know what the other person is thinking, stop speaking. Because if you're on the phone with somebody and they're saying something to you and you didn't get the answer you wanted or you thought that there was a little bit more that they would say, but you jump in, there's nothing that you'll get from that. Where if they answer the question and then there's a pause and you just let the pause live there, the other person will probably continue. Mm-hmm. The other person will be like, oh, that wasn't enough. Okay, I could say this. And that's when they're going to fill in with probably what you actually wanted. If you didn't get your question answered and they gave you, you know, a 10-second response and you don't say anything for another 2 seconds, they may continue.
And I love that you said that, because I also read that in this interview book that I was reading. It was talking, you know, how to have better interviews, and it was saying that if you don't get the answer you want, just wait. Because humans' natural instinct is that if you don't respond, they're going to keep talking.
Right, because if they say something like, what's your salary expectation for this job? And you say, well, I think for this position and these responsibilities, it would depend. Or you can put it back on them and say, what would the responsibilities look like? But if you just say, I don't know, a quick answer, and they don't say anything else, you're already nervous. You're already in an awkward position because you're in an interview. The likelihood is they're quiet, expecting you to eventually get to a number. And if you just keep filling the space with words, you probably will accidentally say one. Where just let the pause be there. Stop talking and just let the pause. And then let them jump in with, well, for this position, we're thinking X. Where you didn't bury yourself. You didn't put yourself into a box.
Yes, and I love that so much because it's such an instinct to keep talking. And I love the checklist at the very end of it is because I've been doing that so much is like just counting how many times I'm interrupting people because it is a tool. It is something that we just are all doing, especially with the Zoom world. And one person can talk at a time, especially whenever you're virtual. And so it's even more noticeable. And so I love it.
Yeah, and we don't want to seem stupid. So we will fill things in where if somebody is saying something and we kind of already know where they're going to go with it or we think we know what their topic is and we're like, oh, I already know that, we jump in and we talk over them and we try and say things where we don't actually know what that person was thinking. We don't know where it's going to go. Like, I would do that all the time when I started my last job, not the one I'm in now, but the job before. Anytime somebody showed me something, I would be like, oh, yeah, I did that at my last job. Oh, yeah, I did that at my last job. Where if I had just shut up, I probably would have learned things faster, but I kept shutting people down, and I wasn't letting them speak. Your intelligence is going to come through in other ways. Your intelligence is going to come through in your performance and the work that you actually make. It's not going to come through in the extra sentence you said during a training day.
Yes, exactly. So speaking out of turn and butting in and cutting people off, it doesn't make you look smarter to anybody else.
It doesn't. And I notice it a lot. I make broadcast commercials as my day job when I'm not writing books. And I've noticed on client calls, it happens where there'll be like five people on a client call and one person is leading the call. We'll get 20 minutes in. They're the only person that's spoken. And then as we're wrapping up the call and they go, all right, is there anything else anybody wants to say? The other four people jump in with mundane nothingness just to prove that they were listening and that they were on the call. And if they just said, nah, I'm good. That answered all my questions. Thanks. Bye, everybody. That would have been fine. Mm-hmm. Now we're sitting for an extra 10 minutes wasting everybody's time talking further about a topic nobody needed explanations on because somebody felt that they had to participate in order to make it seem to everybody else that they were involved.
You start to learn as I've gotten older and like more in my career and starting to learn how to ask better questions is it's not really asking them in front of everybody. It's making sure that you're asking them to the right person because you can also ask a really awesome question and continue to talk, but you're not in the right room to be asking these conversations or asking these people. And so then it almost becomes you're talking, but you're talking to no one then because the right person isn't there.
Right. And sometimes that's another chapter in the book is asking questions. Sometimes we asked a question and somebody laughed at us or we were like given a response that said we shouldn't have asked that question. So we stop asking questions altogether. And that's the wrong lesson. You shouldn't stop asking questions. You just need to ask questions to the right people or at the right moment. It's not, we have for some reason stopped asking questions to each other. And that's why I wrote a book is we stopped asking questions. We feel embarrassed. We feel like we have to know everything. We definitely don't. We shouldn't know everything. You can't. It's an impossible task.
It's impossible.
But we stopped. We stopped asking questions and we just started Googling everything. And now we're overwhelmed by the responses.
And the questions that you have in the book are also like questions that you can't just Google search. You can't just Google, why should I stop talking so much?
Right. And if you did, it would come up with like 50 Google pages of results and none of them would give you an answer. They would all have different opinions. And the whole purpose of the book is to be able to answer something in a really fast, constructive way where you don't have to go through endless pages of Google and you don't have to figure out what to even Google in the first place. It's all right there. Right. And it's for you to pick up and put down and use it as you need. It's just a life guide to sort of sit in your back pocket and pick up when you have a topic you need help on.
Well, thank you so much. I loved reading it, and I hope that everyone else, all my listeners, will read it. But speaking of questions, I have a game for us. So I have these best self cards, and I really enjoyed to use them because they do ask deeper questions. And so I've used them at work with friends, and I'm trying to find any other way to use them. So I started using them on my podcast. So I have two groups, and I will have you pick which group you would like me to ask the question from, and then I'll read it and let you answer. So would you rather ask a question about beliefs or self-awareness?
Ooh, self-awareness.
Okay. What would you like to re-experience because you did not appreciate it fully the first time?
Oh my goodness, so many things. The first thing that comes to mind with that, there's two things.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that comes to mind is travel when I was younger. I travel a lot now as an adult, but I wish I had the ability and the awareness when I was younger to recognize what a unique experience that was in shaping who I would become, and learning bravery and courage and independence and so many things that you get when you travel and you're thrown out of your comfort zone. But also my second answer to that would be learning a emotional capacity as a kid. I was raised by a child psychologist for a mother, and I had all the tools to be a very in tune with my feelings and emotions, and I went hard the other way, and now I'm like unlearning that, and I'm someone that intellectualizes themselves out of a lot of emotions and is very anxious, and somebody who has a lot of suppressed feelings, and that comes out in more physical symptoms. So I wish that I had really paid attention and gotten the life lessons that come from growing into your emotions as you mm-hmm. go through childhood and adolescence. If I could do that again, I would.
Well, and that's almost kind of like what the book has become too, is it kind of is a way of giving those childhood lessons that everyone should be learning that you've learned, and just kind of giving those experiences to people.
Right. There's so much that we learned that we now have to unlearn. And there's so much that we learned in a different way that didn't mm-hmm. resonate with us. Like our parents' generation taught us from what they know. But unfortunately, we live in a very technological, app-based generation that a lot of their lessons aren't applicable to our lives. And so that's why I wrote the book, because I was like, you know, you may think of investing as like fancy Wall Street guys, but honestly, investing can just be an app on your phone.
And exactly.
It doesn't have to be as fancy as the things our parents taught, and the lessons that they learned are different than the lessons we're learning. And we're learning it in a different society where emotional capacity is a far more important and vital discussion, because social media is telling us we're doing everything wrong. And if we're not in tune with our own emotions, and we're not confident in who we are in our own life and the happiness that we get from ourselves, if all of that is off kilter, we're going to believe that all that external validation from social media is real, and it's going to really throw us off.
Yeah, and I love that answer, and I love that you were able to introspectively think of that right off the top of your head too, because I was thinking more like, oh, I really wish whenever I went to this family trip that we went on, I wish I would have experienced that more, because it was like one of our best family vacations. And so I thought of that one, but I love your example, because I do think that it does kind of come out through the book and the examples that you give. And so I'm so happy, Natasha, that you were able to come on and talk about the book, Shit Adults Never Taught Us. And I know that now it is out. So can you let us know where we can find you, the book?
Absolutely. So Shit Adults Never Taught Us is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple Books, Google Play Books. You can find me on Instagram at Shit Adults Never Taught Us. You can also email me. I love talking to people, answering questions. Like I said, ask questions. Even if you feel like you can't ask them on the page or whatever, you're welcome to email me any questions you have about the book. If you're like, I don't fully understand this topic, feel free to email me. It's shitadultsnevertaughtus@gmail.com. I also do an author Q&A on the Instagram page a couple times a week. So if you DM me a question or you email a question, I won't tag you. It's just like, you know, I won't call on you on class. I won't tell you everyone who the question came from. But if you have that question, other people might as well. So I answer them there.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was such a pleasure to talk with you.
Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.